Hey, excuse me. That's my credit card. You can't sign from my credit card.
Yes, I can. I'm committing fraud. Here. I am a fraud man.
Actually, the bank is going to know that's not my signature.
No, it doesn't work that way. Here's what you think happens when you sign a receipt.
According to my 30 years of handwriting expertise and intimate knowledge of Phil, I don't believe this is the way he dots his I's. Shut down the account! It's all for you, buddy. It's all for you.
And here's what actually happens.
Nothing happened.
Yeah, nothing happens. No one ever compares your signature on the receipt to the real one. It's more security theater.
Yeah, but then what secures my credit card?
Nothing, again. Oh, you might not know this. The credit card system is a pre-internet relic with virtually no built-in security.
Oh.
Back in the 50s, a retailer would just copy down your number and phone it into the bank.
The credit card number is 4250.
Yeah, but things are way more advanced now.
Yeah, now a machine copies down your number and sends it to the bank.
Hello and welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. I am Mike. I'm joined, of course, by my co-host, Drunkard STL on the Twitters.
Hey, hey, hey.
And via Skype, Mr. Travis Hulse.
Hello.
We do have one hell of a program for you this evening. Adam Conover from the True TV series Adam Ruins Everything will be here in just a few minutes.
One of my new favorite shows.
There's some shows that, like, when they pop up on your DVR, it's like you skip everything else and you go straight to that. I'd say that is one of the tops for me. I like that Nathan For You, that's one of those shows. And The Walking Dead, and that's about it, I'd say.
There aren't a lot of shows that I can watch with, like, my kids.
Yeah.
And Adam Ruins Everything, not only is it mostly appropriate for them, it's also teaching them something, and they, like, really like it because Adam is, like, a super, you know, cheery, poppy, funny guy.
Right.
Who's just kind of awkward and's got that big hair. They absolutely love him. They think he's super funny.
Yeah, I was really excited when we got that interview because he's a lot of fun. It was a good talk, too. I enjoyed talking to him. So that's coming up in just a few minutes. I wanted to talk to you guys about other things.
Okay.
There's other things going on in the world.
Like what?
Drunk.
Yes, sir.
I was doing some thinking.
Oh, boy.
About the Titanic the other day. Did you know, Drunk?
Like the movie or the actual
movie? The movie and the
real okay.
Thing. None of that was historically accurate, Drunk.
Which one?
The Titanic. Those people weren't even real people. That was all a bunch of hooey.
The part about the ship hitting the iceberg was pretty accurate.
I mean, it's physically down there, yeah?
Yeah, but I mean, like, it was all a bunch of other stuff. It had nothing to do with...
cargo?
No, like the Leonardo DiCaprio thing and all that. And
So we're talking about the movie.
Their love triangle.
Okay.
Is all bullshit. And that's kind of silly that they would make a movie about...
Well, I'm pretty sure I've said
an actual thing that none of the actual things in the movie were actual things that happened. They made a dramatic love triangle.
Well, I'm pretty sure I've said this on these particular airwaves before, but, like, the bad guy in that movie is way the opposite of a bad guy. Like, the guy you're supposed to hate did nothing but care for Kate Winslet. She just fucking slapped him aside for this.
But he's not even real.
Young prick.
The only reason that
James Cameron... That guy had a good point. Leonardo DiCaprio's kind of like a bum.
No, exactly. Was exactly a bum.
He's like...
And he did nothing but shower that bitch in crystals and fucking give her money and...
And, like, this guy...
How is he the bad guy? What did he do?
This guy doesn't have a nickel to piss on.
Right.
Typically in all of those movies, the guy that you're supposed to root for is actually like one of the worst possible people. No matter how sympathetic they make the character, the guy is usually trying to sabotage an ongoing relationship where somebody's about to get married.
Right,
or somebody's
he's
about
a
like,
home wreck.
And it seemed like a very good relationship until that movie fucking started.
Yeah.
That
right.
damn boat.
Yeah, they seem to be doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had all kinds of fancy shit. I mean, that's financial stability. You can overlook a lot of things.
That was generational wealth right there.
And she was marrying into big money.
Right. I mean, you can fake it a little bit.
What the fuck is her problem?
She was the bad one, too. Like, if you knew those
money people, erases a lot of obstacles.
If you knew those people in real life and, like, they were happy together, they were with each other, you know, maybe it wasn't always perfect. They got into tiffs once in a while. But what couple doesn't?
And imagine you're Kate Winslet's dad and you find out this shit went down. She's like, you were about to marry this guy
right.
who had crazy amounts of money. And you threw it away so you could bang some hobo in a car?
Right.
Couldn't even buy a boat ticket.
And then at the end of the movie, she's telling her grandkids, who aren't from the guy in the movie, that is like the best night of her life. Like,
yes. Shit on grandpa. We don't care about grandpa.
Why? What the fuck's wrong with her?
That drowned was the love of my life 80 years ago.
And I know
And this is like a critically acclaimed, like...
I know it's been said countless times. I'm not saying anything new here, guys. But there was plenty of room for him to get on the piece of wreckage with her.
Oh, absolutely.
He didn't need to die. He could have just got on the piece of wreckage with her. It's been said before. We're not saying anything new, but it's true. But we're missing the point. None of those people are even real, but it's centered around a real event.
Okay.
Don't
like
you think that's
Pearl Harbor?
Don't you think that's weird, Travis? Don't ruin Pearl Harbor for
those
me.
Those people are not real
made
people.
Up story.
That's a made up story.
Real event.
Mm-hmm.
About Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Let me tell you one thing that I really hate. I know
Armageddon,
everybody much reviles Pearl
up.
Harbor, but let me tell you
that shit did not happen when we tried to explode that asteroid.
If you get the chance to watch Pearl Harbor, just watch Josh Hartnett behind the cockpit of the supposed plane that he's flying. The dude bounces back and forth like he's playing Galaga at the arcade. When you move in your chair, Josh Hartnett, you don't have to move side to side to show that you're in the cockpit of a plane. That's not how it works.
I don't remember Pearl Harbor too well, but I remember it was the same kind
Pearl
of
Harbor 2 either.
That would be sweet.
Pearl Harbor 2?
But, you know, they're making a Bad Boys 3. Let's make a Pearl Harbor 2.
Right, might as well.
So what happens in Pearl Harbor 2? Is it...
Same thing that happens in Titanic 2.
I mean, is it a continuation of the events of Pearl Harbor 1? Is it, like, the rebuilding or anything? Is there anything like that?
I think it's just a bunch of us kicking some ass.
I think that what happens is that during the events of the first Pearl Harbor, some weird experiment by the Japanese takes effect, and that whole battle is transported back in time.
So Pearl Harbor 2 is a...
prequel.
Is like a love story in like Hiroshima.
And then he is a kamikaze pilot and he flies to his death.
Yeah, he jumps out of the plane because there's only enough room for her. It's a two-seater, but he jumps out and he gives her an amulet.
But like, if you name... I mean, certainly Armageddon, none of those people are real.
Correct.
I get that. Armageddon is a totally made-up story.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, Titanic and,
San
like,
Andreas,
Pearl Harbor
same way.
Are like, real things that happened.
Uh-huh.
And it's weird that they made, like, a fictional story within an actual event.
Well, they do that with 9/11 all the time now.
What do you... Oh, they make 9/11 movies?
Well, they made, like, there was a rash of them, like...
There was one with Nicolas Cage that, like, he saved people in the Twin Towers, but that was based on, like, a real dude, though, right?
And then there was United 93, which I also believe was based on whatever people thought might have happened on
the people in the plane.
Based on the calls, yeah. But then there's also, like, that Nicholas Sparks love story where it happens that Robert Pattinson at the very end is in the tower as the plane is crashing towards the window. There's the Adam Sandler 9/11 movie. What is that?
There's an Adam Sandler 9/11 movie?
Yeah, it's Rain Over Me. It's where his entire family died in the Twin Towers, and it's like the aftermath of that.
Oh, I must have missed that one.
Yeah, there's a rash of
9/11. Does he do like, scrappity-doo, my family died in 9/11. Ooh-shoo-shoo-boo-shoo. No?
No. So. It's pretty serious. Oh. And actually, I think a friend Don Cheadle is in that movie.
Don Cheadle and me are good pals. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I still feel like you could do this for, like, a lot of movies. I mean.
Is that a lot of movies?
I mean.
That they base fake stories in, like, real scenarios, like Pearl Harbor? Well,
what would be your favorite event to make a movie based around? Completely fictional that we could make a movie.
That has actually happened?
Yeah, like, say you wanted to make.
Like Braveheart?
Yeah, well, like an entire motion picture based around the time that Michael Jackson's hair caught on fire, but it's like everything that's happening around him.
And just at some point, Michael Jackson runs by with his hair on fire.
So a comedy, because he's trying to find a bucket of water to stick his head in.
So you make a romantic comedy, right, with Charlize Theron and Ethan Hawke.
Uh-huh. You got it.
I don't like Ethan Hawke. I don't like his face. But we're going to put him in this... fictional world set in a real situation. They are working on the set of what video was that? That his hair? Oh, that was a Pepsi commercial, wasn't it?
It's a Pepsi commercial. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like it's this whole romantic comedy where these two are like consultants that get put together to make this video go off without a hitch, and then Michael Jackson's hair catches on fire, and they have to like put out the media firestorm, but they also find love.
Yeah, but and they don't like each other at first, obviously. And right. She probably has a boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. And he's kind of a dick. Like, enough of a dick that in a movie universe, you have no problem rooting against him, even though he's probably not that bad of a guy. And she's probably in a better situation with him than the other guy.
He might play video games just a little bit too much, but typically he like takes her out to nice places and gets along with her family.
But fuck him. It isn't told from his perspective.
That's right. Her Charlize's gay best friend really digs Ethan Hawke, so she kind of listens. That's her voice of reason.
Right. What do we call it?
Winner.
Can we? Oh no, we can't call it like liar, liar, pants on fire or anything, unless somebody like starts a lie or something.
That's a sequel to the
Flames
Jim Carrey
of Love.
Movie.
The what?
The Flames of Love.
That's not bad. Like Carry the Torch. All right, so let's get to the guest, Adam Conover. Adam Ruins Everything on True TV. Had a lot of fun talking to him. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, this is Chris Brake.
And John Rapp.
And you're listening to Strange Label.
Hear the Chris Brake Show live Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Or 7 p.m. Central Time on StrangeLabel.com. Or go to ChrisBrakeShow.com for past episodes. This is Strange Label.
Welcome back. Our guest tonight is the star of Adam Ruins Everything, which airs Tuesday nights on True TV. follow Adam Conover on Twitter, at Adam Conover, and let him know you heard him here. Thank you for doing this, Adam.
Oh, of course. Sorry, we had to go back and forth a little bit getting the time set up, but I'm very happy to do it.
No big deal. Your show is great. I enjoy it a lot. I watch it every week. The only problem.
Oh, thank you so much.
You are living up to your namesake, though. You're ruining a lot of things. I think part of the reason that I enjoy the show as much as I do is because my girlfriend is kind of a hypochondriac. So it seems like every week when the show ends, she walks down the hall and then comes back in here and throws something in the garbage.
Oh, no!
We've now lost tuna fish. Tuna fish is gone. Thanks, Adam. And mouthwash. Mouthwash is gone. And Tylenol. We can't have Tylenol anymore. So.
Well, tuna, I don't know. I think canned tuna is probably okay. I think it's mostly tuna in restaurants.
Oh, canned tuna. I wish you would have clarified.
I'm not sure, actually. I just feel like if it's from a big corporation that's doing it, they have a harder time passing it off. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's just my guess, but I'm not totally positive about that.
You don't hear about ratings, I guess, anymore. Is the show doing well?
Oh yeah, it is doing well. We do have ratings that I think you can look up on. I think there are sites that publish them, even for basic cable. But yeah, it's a hit for the network.
It is.
You're getting a lot of positive reviews. I see a lot of people saying some very good things about what you're doing.
Yeah. It's been really gratifying. It's been really wonderful.
Did you think it would get to that point, like based on the videos that you made with this same premise previously?
I was hopeful that it would, but I'm very astounded by the critical reaction. It's been really gratifying and wonderful. Yeah.
True TV was court TV, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
And I guess they've rebooted.
They switched over from being court TV a number of years ago, but they're like doing a brand revamp in the last couple of years that this show is a part of.
Well, the first time they revamped it, it was the Danny Bonaducci channel, I think.
they had a couple, they did a lot of reality for a while, and now they're moving off of that and doing comedy.
Doesn't it kind of seem like all of the niche networks eventually abandon their intended existence and kind of move towards, like, I guess, for lack of a better word, like normal programming? I mean, like, even HBO. I think HBO's original intention was to be just show and movies, and now.
Well, yeah, I mean, they all. Yeah, I mean, that original conception, I think, of a channel like always drifts and changes, especially because, you know, in television, as much as any other, you know, medium, you know, like the people at the top, you know, come and go, right? And so when they come in, they say, well, here's what we're going to do new. And that always involves doing some kind of new programming, you know? So there's always a lot of switching. But, you know, I mean, like Comedy Central has always been comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's, I think there's a genuine comedy boom right now. There's more people watching comedy and talking about comedy, and there's more interest in it. And so there's a lot of channels that have moved towards comedy in recent years. Like FX has become very comedy. IFC has as well. And True is now doing that as well, which is awesome because, you know, it's just another home for great comedy on TV as a comedian. I'm very happy to have there be more comedy on television.
It's super smart, too, because I find now True TV is one of those networks that I gravitate towards. You know, there's been some decent programming on there for, you know, I'd say a year or two, but now they're really just like, they're just throwing it out there.
They have a lot more coming out, too. They had some recently picked up my friend Jamie Lee's show, which will be really great.
I love her.
She's the best. Let's see. They're also, yeah. They're
Jonah Ray got a show on. He's got a show coming on True TV, too, doesn't he?
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did hear about that. Yeah,
Hidden America, I think.
Yes, they're doing more. They're doing more and more stuff like that. And, you know, and the channel already has a fan base, you know, like there are already people who tweeted me about the show who are fans of The Impractical Jokers or Michael Carbonaro or those other, you know, those other shows, which sort of set the table for us doing what we're doing. The awesome thing about True is that they're very new, you know, they're new. Their new identity is very new, right? So they're open to trying new things and doing a show as strange as this one. But also they're in nearly every home that has cable. So the reach is very, very broad, which is great because there's a lot of places you can do content for right now that, that, you know, you don't really get seen because people don't have it yet, you know?
Since it is like a new revamp, do you get a lot of creative control there? I mean, does the network typically, you know, kind of leave you alone and let you do your thing?
Yeah, I mean, we have total creative control. I mean, we do notes process with them like anything else, and, you know, they review drafts and things like that, and certainly make comments, and that's a way that the scripts get better, you know, but we... We've had total creative control, and they've totally stayed out of our way in terms of, but people say, oh, how did you get, people literally said to me, how did you get Tylenol to agree to let you do this? You know what I mean? And it's like, you don't have to, cause it's
you called up Tylenol, right? And they said, oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Expose all of our dirty secrets. Go for it. Sounds fun.
Well, what people don't realize is that the ass covering that network legal and ad sales departments do is so pervasive that people literally think it's against the law to have logos in the background of a TV show or movie, right?
But you do see that from when they blur out the names of things on T-shirts and stuff.
Yes, and that's literally because, you know, you've got a lawyer saying we'll be sued. It's not that people are routinely sued for this reason. It's that you have lawyers who are covering their asses about it, right? But True, very early on, sort of got their... Basically, they said, we know what kind of show this is. We understand what this show is doing, and we're going to let it do its thing. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we have a, you know, piece about Johnson & Johnson. We have, that's the Listerine piece. We have a piece about Tylenol. Those are companies that are big advertisers, you know, and they just say, well, we just won't sell their ads on this episode.
And
you know?
For people who have not watched the show, your revelation about Listerine was that it was originally... cleaner.
Yeah, it was originally like a general household cleaner. It was just a mildly alcoholic solution, you know, that you could use on basically anything. They started selling it as mouthwash, but the problem was that people didn't really think that they needed mouthwash in the 20s. They were like, well, what, my, you know, unless your breath smells bad, you're fine. You know what I mean? But like, they didn't think that you need routine use of mouthwash. So Listerine dug up this old word halitosis, which sort of like a Latin coinage, and said it was a disease you could have without knowing it. And so like they ran ads that said you could have halitosis and be none the wiser. And then, you know, when you like, everyone secretly hates you because your breath smells and you don't notice. Like they had these really cruel ads and people believed it and started using, you know, mouthwash routinely, as a thing that they did every day. But in reality, like chronic, you know, obviously your mouth can get stinky if you don't, you know, brush your teeth or if you've, you know, if you've eaten and then it's been a while since you've washed your mouth. Right. But true chronic bad breath is very rare, you know, like if you have a bad tooth or something along those lines, you know.
Well, it seems like most of the things that you are like kind of debunking have all stemmed from ad campaigns that we all grew up with, our grandparents grew up with and just kind of passed down.
A lot of them are, yeah.
Yeah, it's insane to see how pervasive it is in our culture, the actual ad space.
It just kind of becomes the truth because we've always...
Because it's been repeated so much, yes. I mean, obviously, those are the most successful ad campaigns ever, right? Are the ones that are, I mean, the engagement rings one from our pilot episode where that's the best example, where De Beers marketed the idea of a diamond engagement ring, and that became a bedrock tradition in American, you know, romantic culture. And it's a tradition that directly benefits just one company, you know, like that. That's the starkest example. It's a matter of public record that they did it, you know, and it really was the only source of this happening. You know, if a bit of advertising can work its way into the culture so deeply that people do it, even though they've forgotten about the original ad campaign because it was so long ago, that's incredibly powerful. I mean, you have to hand it to them for it being so, you know, so effective.
Right.
For it to span generations, that's amazing.
Yes.
I just wonder if the guy who came up with that, he can even brag about it because...
I mean, they can and do, you know, like A Diamond Is Forever is widely regarded within advertising as the greatest ad campaign of all time.
Sure.
You know, like books have been written about the people who did this, you know, it's not a secret, you know. I think people even found out, you know, A Diamond Is Forever was originally come up with by a female copywriter, I believe. I forget her name, but, you know, people went and found out who it was, and she's recorded in the annals of advertising history, you know. And it's been enormously successful. I'm not the cynical kind of person where I believe that like everything in society is due to a reason like this, or, you know, that everything that everything benefits someone. I think that's that sort of.
Well, you're really working your way down the list, though.
That's true. But, you know, not everything is for this reason. You know, there isn't a shadowy capitalist behind every corner, you know, cackling with glee. What the show is really about is the mistakes that we make thoughtlessly, right, in society. And not all of those are due to like a nefarious or greedy, you know, manipulation. A lot of them are due to laziness or you know, to happenstance. And those are a lot of the other ones that we talk about on the show. The you know, one we have, it's coming out not this Tuesday, but next week, is about the history of summer vacation. And the only reason we have summer vacation is because, you know, 100 years ago when urban schools started being built for the first time at these large public schools, it was too hot in the summertime. And rich people would, like, take their kids out of school and they'd be like, we're going to go to the Hamptons. You know, we're going to go on vacation. We're getting out of the city. And as a result, the schools just started, they got in the habit of closing. Because this was a pattern that happened. Right?
So we didn't used to have summer vacation?
We didn't used to have summer vacation. Not before. I mean, well, we didn't used to have public schooling. Public schooling is only about, you know, little over a century old. But it wasn't because of farming or because of anything like that. It was just that it was too hot in urban centers to have school.
Probably and, very costly to keep the air conditioners running and stuff.
There was no air conditioning, you know.
Oh.
Now that there is, you can have school in the summer, you know. It's just this habit that schools got into that we're perpetuating now, you know, out of just force of habit. There's no particular reason to do it, you know.
I think if you were to advocate that, I think that people wouldn't be for that. The 3 months off is precious now, right?
Well, it's not. Yes, we think of it as precious. It has this big, it has this cultural power and force, right? Yes. Oh, those wonderful 3 months. What a wonderful time. You think back to your own summer vacation, yada, yada, right?
Right.
But the fact is that this is what we talk about in the episode. There's a phenomenon called summer slide, wherein kids actually lose months of instruction during the summer vacation because they're not using their brains. They're not learning, you know?
Oh, right.
Now you might say, well, it's good for kids to have. Now, that's a documented phenomenon. It's mitigated if, you know, the kids go to summer school or if they go to camp or if they do other activities like that. And you might say, yes, it's so important for kids to have time to play outside, right?
Right.
But not all kids can afford to go to camp. A lot of them are, especially if you imagine a kid in the Bronx who's, you know, comes from a lower income family. That kid's not going to summer camp, right? Maybe that kid lives in a dangerous neighborhood. He can't even play outside.
Yeah. And his parents probably still have to work in the summertime.
Exactly. So his parents have to work. Home. So this kid is at home watching TV, right, and just trying to stay out of trouble. That kid is being abandoned by the public school system, right? The entire rest of the year, the state gives the kid a safe place, hopefully safe, right, but a safe place where the kid is being monitored. That's just as important a function of public education as educating the kid itself, right, giving the parents of the kid a place for the kid to go while they're at work.
That's right.
That's important to an industrialized society. So that whole family is being abandoned by the system that supports them the rest of the year for those 3 months. That's a real burden. So, so other countries have a system where it's like, you know, every couple months, the kids get 2 weeks off a year, for instance, you know, that sort of system is, you know, doesn't have this huge summer slide problem that sends kids back, you know. And we talked to a guy who runs Heart of LA, which is a program for at-risk kids, you know, it's like after school programs and stuff like that.
Right.
And he says, yeah, during the summer months, like, it's a lot harder on the kids that we serve because they have nowhere to go in the summer. So there's no nefarious reason for summer vacation to exist. It's just something that we're doing thoughtlessly that, you know, we could put more thought into.
Do you find yourself getting like regularly surprised by the topics that you cover? I mean, when you go into this, does it change the way, I guess you view our society typically?
Or is this stuff kind of already bones in your craw?
I'd say more the latter. These are all ideas I've encountered in my own, you know, reading or research or, you know, I'm no enormous scholar. I just read magazines and listen to podcasts and read books and et cetera, you know, and this is just me processing that information and thinking it through and having it affect how I think about society, you know, but there are things that, yeah, our writers bring to the show that I, there are some facts that I didn't know before we started, you know, working on the show, that when I heard them in the writer's room, I was like, what? Really? We have a couple of them coming up. In fact, I won't spoil what they are, but we have a sex episode coming up. And let me just say, there were a couple things that I did not know about the human body that I was not aware I didn't know.
Oh no! I will need to tune in.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's straight up. Look, that episode is really crazy because it is straight up basic sex ed, and it's shit that I guarantee you don't know already.
Well, I find myself pretty lost in that topic anyway, so anything will help.
You're going to watch it and go like, I can't believe I wasn't taught this stuff in sixth grade. You know, that's what it is.
Well, and I
sit down
with
my kids immediately.
That, like, a major compliment I can give you in the show is that, I mean, you're shitting on things, but not in like a overly negative way. I mean, I think that it would be real easy for you to just come out there and say, crime investigation is bullshit, and I think it's stupid. But it seems like you come to it from like a smart way. And the show is, I mean, kind of it's fun and
it's very
and
fun.
Entertaining. It's yeah. It's not
Thank
just.
You.
Do you get what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I think that it's easy. I mean, like, you know, me especially. I'm fairly negative, I think, and
when Mike wants to uncover something, he typically just tells people how stupid they are for believing it.
That's stupid, but you don't really do that. You kind of make it fun.
Well, I'm not a negative person. I don't like I don't particularly enjoy negativity.
How does that work? How do you do that?
How do I not be negative? I don't know. Yeah. That's how I am. That's just how I am, man. I don't know. I guess I'm a pretty cheery person generally. I think that's good. But, I like to think of myself as pragmatic, and I really care about understanding the world around me and having an accurate assessment of it. You know, now I don't think that I'm like, you know, I think that's something that everybody wants, you know, and everybody desires and everybody is open to. And my goal is to, you know, like educate is maybe not the right word. My goal is to inspire everyone to think more critically. And to think this way more often, and people like to do it. So it's just sort of me bringing information to people, you know, and hoping that, letting them open their minds a little bit. But if I was combative about it, it's people would tune out, you know,
right.
No one wants to hear, you know, honestly, our show gets compared to Penn and Teller's Bullshit a lot. And I loved that show. I loved it when it came out. I watched it a lot.
That show was kind of negative though.
That exactly.
You're the happy side of the coin of Penn and Teller's Bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Like I went back and I watched that show, and you know, I still like it just as much. But I was like, I forgot how much of this is just Penn calling people an asshole. You know, like he shows footage of people, and you just go, look at this fucking asshole. You know? And now that is wonderful and cathartic, right? That's wonderful and cathartic.
Yeah,
but
it feels good.
If I agree with the asshole, right? If I am in that condition where I'm like, well, I don't know. I like feng shui, you know what
right.
I mean, or whatever it is. I'm not going to be convinced by Penn calling the person an asshole. If I'm oppressed by the person who, you know, is into feng shui, then yes, I'm going to enjoy that. But so now it's just a matter of what's important to you. Cause for me, I really, I always want to convince people. And so I always try to approach people from a place of where they're at the time, you know, what is their current mindset and how do I speak to that? You know what I mean? And that's just how I prefer to do things. I don't think everyone has to do that. You know, I think sometimes there's plenty of issues where someone could disagree with you, like, you know what? I don't want to fucking deal with you. You're a moron. If you disagree with me, get
right,
out of here.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's fine. You can do that. Sometimes we have to do that in life. You know, we can't always take it upon ourselves to educate every incorrect person we ever meet, but I try to do it as much as possible. So I try to do it in a way that is empathetic and sensitive to the person who is bringing me the stupid idea, you know. So I always like to say, well, why do you think that? Oh, well, that's interesting. You know, it's classic Socratic method stuff.
Right. When I watched your episode about crime scene investigation, it reminded me of a story. 10 years ago, I was working as a manager at a storage place. And I came to work one day and someone had thrown a rock through the office window and stolen the cash register. And so I called the police. I stood there. I waited. And the guy came and he dusted the cash drawer for fingerprints. And then he got in the car and was leaving. He gave me a card. If you remember anything, let me know. And I offered to give the guy the rock that the guy had thrown. I said, hey, do you want this rock? You know, maybe you can, you know, dust it for fingerprints or do some kind of, you know, test on the rock. And the guy looked at me like I was the biggest moron in the world. And he said, this isn't CSI, man. We can't dust a rock. And I said, yeah. Well, I mean, do you want the rock? You know, you can take it with you. And he said, what am I going to do with the rock? and I kept the rock in the store, and then eventually I, you know, put it back out with the other rocks. but well, I thought for sure that this guy was going to crack the case with this rock.
Yeah.
And so when I saw your episode basically debunking everything you see on a modern cop show, I was like, yeah. Oh, that guy probably gets that all the time, and he probably hates it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's interesting. There's this idea called the CSI effect, which you usually hear about. There's two sort of versions of this, but the version you usually hear about is cops saying, oh, man, because of the CSI effect, juries think that we are like superheroes, you know, yeah. And that we can and that we should have perfect prints for everything. And the reality is we don't. And it's hard for us to convict these criminals, you know, and that so that's the CSI, you know, effect from a law enforcement perspective. The CSI that effect that we're talking about is the fact that, you know, we do it on a cop show. We parody a CSI style show, obviously. Right.
Right.
But the effects that we're talking about, you know, we make fun of Zoom and Enhance and some of the sillier sci-fi ones a little bit. But the fact is that a lot of the techniques that actual police officers use in the real field don't really work. And because people think they do, they're able to convince juries that, you know, that they've caught the person that they think they have, you know. And so a lot of times what will happen is the police will use a technique that doesn't work, but because it's convincing, right, they're yeah. able to convince even themselves, hey, we found the right person, you know. So a big example is like unconsciously cueing witnesses, you know. Police can totally unconsciously cue a witness to say that they've remembered the person that the cop wants them to remember. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And since the cop's goal is to explicitly make a case and, you know, find someone who they're going to prosecute, right? Like a cop is not like a scientist, right? a cop's goal or a detective's goal is not to find like the person who beyond the shadow of a doubt did it. Their goal is to find one person who they can charge with the crime.
Right.
You know?
And then it's somebody else's job to convince a jury, I guess.
Yes. But. And it's a combative system, right? So they're just saying, we just want to find someone who we can convince a jury.
Get this off my desk.
Get this off my desk. Exactly. It's like, all right, we got a fingerprint. We got this. We got that. And so they can use those techniques because people believe that they work, because they believe the lie detector works, because they believe that eyewitness testimony is infallible, and because they believe in these sort of like, you know, forensic science techniques with like, you know, doctors wearing lab coats, most of which are unverifiable. Because they believe in all those things. If they get all those things together, boom, you probably got a conviction. And so they just, you know, push it through that way. Now, a lot of people are properly convicted by these techniques, but a lot of people are improperly convicted by them. And so this is our, you know, attempt to be like a little bit of, you know, again, it's a combative system. We're trying to push back in the other direction and say, hey, we need to be more skeptical of these techniques when we see them in a jury setting. Something we didn't even get into on the show is like the issue of bad forensic science experts. There are like diploma mills for forensic sciences where, I don't know if you've seen these, like in New York, they have subway ads, you know, study crime scene investigation. You know what I mean? And it's a, you know, there are these,
Well, I remember I'm sorry to interrupt you, during the Ferguson thing, there was a guy who was doing analysis of a Skype call between some guy who was like sexting his girlfriend, and he had gunshot sound analysis, and he was a gunshot sound analysis expert.
Yes.
How do you get that job? He's a, sounded like he hesitated for 3 seconds.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing is the fundamental problem is that, you know, the science that he's used in courtrooms does not stand up to the scrutiny of proper science. It's not peer reviewed. You know what I mean?
Right.
So basically now maybe gunshot science. I don't know about that one in particular. So, you know, maybe it is a very well studied, well researched field. And there's thousands of papers verifying that, yes, if you have this particular sound signature, that's a gunshot sound and et cetera. Right.
Right.
That might be true. It might also be the case that it's one guy doing his own fishy research who one time was able to, you know, get his testimony accepted by a judge and jury. And then he rolled that into another case where he got it accepted by a judge and jury again, you know, and then he does that over and over again. Now he's testified in 50 cases. Now he's the gunshot sound guy. And every prosecutor in the Northeast brings gunshot him in, or Southeast, guy. I guess, because it's Missouri, right, brings him in to do the gunshot sound analysis. And they say, how many cases have you testified? And he says 75 cases, you know, or whatever, 100 cases. But this guy gets paid every time he does it. Most forensic scientists who are brought in to testify are paid for their time.
Right.
And
if he's the only one, then, you know, he's got the monopoly on the...
Exactly. And it might be that his work is not actually, you know, has not actually been, you know, peer reviewed in a proper scientific way. Now, again, I'm not saying whether or not gunshot science is bad or not, but one that was recently found to be an example of what I'm talking about is bite mark analysis. Bite mark analysis is in the process of becoming, you know, it's in the process of becoming something you won't see in a jury anymore because it's so widely discredited, but it was used for decades. And it was just this small group of dentists who were like, we're the bite mark guys. We can tell you if there's a bite mark, you know what I mean? And there was no science behind what they were doing. They were just eyeballing it and saying, oh yeah, yeah, those match. And they
get out the string that like a tailor uses and measures their mouth and says, about right.
Exactly. And then they would go in, they would get paid for their time, and then they would get to feel like, you know, the big men when they were on the golf course with their dentist buddy saying, oh yeah, you know, I helped convict this murderer, you know, the other day.
So the title of your show is completely like off kilter because you didn't ruin anything for me. You just told me that I can ordain myself a forensic expert.
Yes. No, I mean, well, yeah, the ruining thing is obviously it's with a wink. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right,
The goal of the show is ultimately to educate people and make this a more, you know, a more well-informed nation, you know, in its proudest moments. That is the purpose. So.
You don't think as a collective we're more like Joey Pants was in The Matrix, where he saw the way things are, but he chose to go back into The Matrix and eat that delicious steak?
I don't think so. I think people always want – I think people always have that desire to be, you know, a higher-minded and smarter person than they were before. You know, I think we have those qualities in equal measure, but I think everyone always, you know, aspires to be more than they are. And I think, you know, by offering them, you know, by offering enlightenment, we you know, I mean, I don't know. The success of the show has shown that is something that people desire, you know, and that people want to be more educated and better in this way. So,
Adam, you are a positive, cheery person.
I am.
So Adam Ruins Everything, True TV, Tuesday nights, 10, 9 central, adamconover.net, at Adam Conover on Twitter. Adam, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I wish you a lot of success because I do, it's for selfishly, I enjoy the show. I want it to continue. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Adam.
Looking for the perfect gift for your young ones? Look no further. Dixco presents the Mike Moore doll. This 10-inch hero will complement the collection of kids young or old.
I keep it in the box so it retains its value. Hashtag Team Mike.
You can pose him. You can move his mouth. Or you can dress him up in lady clothes. It's your doll. We aren't going to tell you how to use it.
His narcissism is so lifelike.
The Mike Moore doll even includes 3 classic Mike scenes.
We have a great show tonight, guys. I like feet. Eat lead, Cobra.
Don't miss your opportunity to own a mic of your own. Go to WFODix.com and get one today. Supplies are limited. Act now.
All right, welcome back. That was Adam Conover from Adam Ruins Everything. Good times.
I need to be like him. in his view of the world. We tried to coax him a little bit and to be like, don't you think that people are kind of cynical and like living in their own little world? And he just kept, no, he's like, I think people are pretty smart and good and, you know, want better things. I'm like, yeah, but don't you think generally, you know, and he just held steadfast to that. But I love that guy.
No, you guys are negative shitheads.
Yeah. Don't think that at all.
So, peeling back the curtain here for a second, we did the Adam Conover interview and the Diamond Dallas Page interview on the same day. So I had a double dose of positivity, and that was a lot of fun. Both of them, I think, went really well. I had a lot of fun talking to both of those guys.
I think the bonus episodes that we're putting out, the second episodes of the week, are leaning more positive, and I think it is the, you know, the guests that we're on, and they're trying to guide us. They're like guiding lights.
Do you think that's what we need to do? Is get positive guests? We'll just book people who seem to be like, we'll just look for people on social media who are smiling in their profile picture, and we'll book them on the show and be like, hey, you're smiling. Why?
Yeah, is that a thing you do on more than one occasion? Because we'd like to talk to you.
Don't you know the world is dog shit and we're all going to die soon and just be dust? Aren't those things you worry about?
You know the one thing lately that's actually been, no matter what's going on, whether my kids are being obnoxious or whether a football team I like is losing, there's one thing that's been popping up, and every time a new Star Wars commercial pops up, I can't help but stop, smile, and breathe it all in.
Just looking forward to the story. Did you read that story about the guy who was going to die and they let him watch the Star Wars movie before he died?
Yeah, J.J. Abrams is like, yeah, here's a screener. Please don't let anybody else watch it.
Yeah, he died.
Yeah, he died like shortly thereafter. You know what I saw yesterday that was along that same lines that actually made me feel real good? There was a story on one of the websites that I visit. And it was this guy's dad who was dying of cancer. I don't even think he was that old, maybe early 70s. And he was like the biggest Seinfeld fan. And when Seinfeld aired live, like he brought the entire family around and they laughed, and it was kind of a bonding experience for his family. So this guy is like dying soon, but his birthday is coming up, and somehow he was able to get like every obscure cast member and a couple of the big ones to record private messages wishing him a happy birthday, you know, like just cell phone selfie videos that range.
They got like Putty and Peterman and all that.
They did, yeah. That's exactly who it was. It was
Peterman, Nazi,
and Putty. Yeah, they contacted him. Newman was in on that. Julia Louis-Dreyfus did it. Kramer said he would do it, but he wouldn't do a video message, so he wanted to call him personally to talk to him because he didn't want the publicity of
call
like,
him
doing
the N-word
or whatever. Yeah, right. But I mean, like all these people from this show that aired 20 years ago, like recorded this guy they've never heard of, a bunch of little short video messages. I thought that was really cool.
Is that like a thing that you would dedicate your time to when you're about to die? Is like something you're a fan of?
I feel like maybe that
seeing
was
something that other people,
a child or something,
haven't
like
seen
them
yet?
What? I don't know. I think, like, are you talking, like, from the perspective of the old...
Like,
the old
Travis, let's say you found out you were going to die
sure.
in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Would you start campaigning to see Star Wars? Would you be like...
No, and it's not the person that's dying that starts the campaign. It's, like, their loved ones who are the ones that start. You know, and I'm sure... Because I make the joke, and I have been making the joke for, the past year with Star Wars. I'm like, I just got to make it till December 18th. And now, like, the Civil War, Captain America Civil War trailer came out, and I'm like, I just got to make it till May 2016.
So what keeps you going is knowing that these movies are coming out.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I enjoy it. And there's maybe some other subconscious things that drive me to that, too. But it's like also with the kids, like, I can expose my children to that. So I can see, like, the old guy who loves Seinfeld, I'm sure it wasn't just about the show. It was probably had a lot to do with the time that he spent with his family just together watching TV, because even something as simple as watching a half hour program that everybody can enjoy in the family is really pretty special. Nobody wants to hang out with their family typically, especially a bunch of kids.
Well, I feel like it's kind of a lot like the old Sunset Thomas thing. I really didn't want anything to do with that, but the firestorm just kept rolling and rolling. Like, once it starts, you can't get.
Yeah, but you weren't dying drunk.
I understand.
You're just being a fuddy dud.
You're correct. However, like, I never wanted that to happen. Period. Which I'm sure things like this happen all the time.
Yeah, but not familiar with.
Once the firestorm of support keeps rolling and rolling and rolling down the mountain, it just keeps going, man. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not familiar with what you're talking about.
When Drunk was going to go to Las Vegas and have sex with the
porn. Oh, sure. I get it.
And then when Drunk was going to fuck the Hot Pocket, and then when Napier was going to get painted white, and I was going to put a baby carrot in his belly button. It's just a long series of disappointments, Travis.
This is a positive show, Mike. This is the second one of the week. Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
It's just I come up with ideas, and then they're the dark cloud. Turn my rainy day to sunshine.
Sunny day, keeping the clouds away. You know what we should do?
Butterfly in the sky.
I can fly twice. Take a look.
I just need to cheer up. I need to feel that joy.
Maybe, Mike, when you come up with these ideas...
Oh, maybe... hold on a second, Travis. Just give me a second.
Yep.
Just give me a second.
Sure.
Today the sky looks cloudy. Oh, yeah.
There it is.
Feeling better.
Just have that queued up all the time.
I just need this. I need this to just kind of be there.
Either this or Jimmy Buffett.
When I start feeling bad, I think of positive thoughts.
That's the drunk version of the song.
What?
Jimmy Buffett, Margarita.
Does that song make you feel good?
Well, I mean...
Travis, what song makes you feel good?
Oh, man. It makes me feel good. I guess that's hard to say.
Any
things on the first Fratelli's album. You play anything from the first Fratelli's album, and it like gets me pumped and in a good mood. It's like upbeat and fun. Yeah, Fratelli's.
I feel like the stoner version of the song is Spirit in the Sky.
Spirit in the Sky will make you feel good.
Gotta have a friend in Jesus.
That guy lived for his entire life off the royalties of that one song.
Oh, I'm sure
song.
He did.
And it's now been exposed to an entirely new generation in the Guardians of the Galaxy Awesome Mix Volume 1.
Yeah, and he's just, the money truck just comes every now and then and just drops off a check. And he just puts it in his account and goes and buys groceries. Mm-hmm. And he just lives off of it. I mean, it's probably not, like, crazy money. He's probably not buying solid gold ceilings
and
stuff.
I'm sure he could, though.
But homeboy's probably living comfortably. He's probably happy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what you need.
Same way with the guy that did a...
You know, like, if he had a girlfriend...
Funky Town.
And, like, him and that girl were, like, a thing... And, like, her dad would be psyched. Her dad would be like, dude, you're with Spirit in the Sky guy. He's financially stable. You guys seem happy together. There's no way some hobo's going to come around and take her from Spirit in the Sky guy.
There's a real-life event that we can turn into a movie. The Spirit in the Sky guy. He's rolling high, and he's got this lady that he loves and treats pretty well. Maybe he plays with his buddies in the garage too often, but he's just trying to make music.
And just like he always has to bring up that he was the one who wrote and performed "Spirit in the Sky,"
and then she falls in love with the sound guy. Ooh.
What sound guy?
You know, like the boom mic.
Yeah, for the Spirit in the Sky guy, it's the sound guy. He's. You
like
know,
the guy on the bottom of the totem pole who makes no money. He's just...
He's an aspiring artist.
So this is set when he actually made Spirit in the Sky?
Right.
See, I figured it was like he's old now and like he's just living on his Spirit in the Sky money. And
well, I think it happens again.
You want her to be like, feel the pity of never being able to have the Spirit in the Sky money.
It's Jerry Rafferty, isn't it? Spirit in the Sky?
I prefer Spirit in the Sky guy.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to... Yeah. You're right.
It's who? Anyway, you want her to never have the joy of the Spirit in the Sky money. So
Norman Greenbaum, not Jerry Rafferty.
So
what fuck?
She's got to fall in love with the sound guy.
Norman Greenbaum.
Before that happens.
Play that song again, buddy. You're going down the hole.
Which song? Spirit in the Sky?
No, the happy song. Is that your happy song? You're going down the dark
could
abyss.
Be.
You're mad at yourself.
I dare you out there in podcast land to hear fucking Spirit in the Sky and not feel good. Now, like if you're walking, like with some headphones on, you started walking a little different when you heard that tune, didn't you? You started walking with a little bit more bounce, right?
Hell yeah, I'm headbanging right now.
You got a friend in Jesus,
or Buddha, or Muhammad, or whoever you love. Stop it.
Spirit in the sky. You know what my favorite part is? Spirit in the sky. When I die. The background gals is what I like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bass, that's the bass.
I like that one song where he's like, and the colored girls go doot, 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 and then colored girls go doot.
That's,
this song cracks me up every time.
I don't know what that has to do with anything. Does that song make you feel good? Is that your feel good song?
No, but it's funny.
And humor makes people feel good.
Absolutely.
What does?
Humor. Humor.
Take a walk on the wild side.
A little racist, though.
A little racist. Guys, we've had fun. We've learned stuff. I appreciate all of you. We'll be back Monday, live, I guess, even though, I don't know.
We just got to get through the live ones so we can get to that second podcast episode that
we
makes
need,
everyone
We need
feel
more good. Positive guests, Drunk. That's what we need.
Yeah, we need guests that can make us money.
Money?
Money.
That's what we need, guys.
More money.
Need some of that Norman Greenbaum money.
Well, that's my mama.
Power of positivity.
Never been a sinner, I never sin. I got a friend in Jesus, so you know that when I die, He's gonna set me up with the Spirit in the sky. Oh, set me up with the Spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go when I die. When I die, and the name is the best.
You to know it's over.
Well, bye.
Thank you for listening. You can hear us live every Monday night at 9-8 Central on strangelabel.com. You can download all of our past episodes as well as other goodies at wfodix.com. Pull up our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the TuneIn app. You can follow us on Twitter at WFODix. You can also follow Travis at ProduceTravis or Drunk at DrunkardSTL. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/WFODix. You can email us at WFODshow@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call when we're live or leave us a message that we may play later on. That phone number is 636-487-4263. Again, thank you for listening. We will see you back here next week.
Sunshine and candy, rainbows and friends, puppies with wagging tails, I hope it never ends. The power of positivity, it never hurts anyone to put a smile on your face. Just think about the happiest place, the power of positivity.